From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
The other night, I hosted an online class about shade gardening featuring Ken Drews, whom I met in 1992-ish, almost exactly 30 years ago to the day, when I interviewed him on the publication of his book, The Natural Shade Garden. In 2015, Ken wrote a whole new shade book, appropriately called The New Shade Garden. So I guess you can tell that shade gardening has been a consistent theme of his work and his own gardening efforts, and it's our topic today. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, the leading publisher in books that share wonders with the natural world, including A Way to Garden by Margaret Roach. The stunning guide imparts decades of plant wisdom and challenges readers to think beyond their garden borders and to consider the ways gardening can enrich the world. Available everywhere books are sold and at timberpress.com. They invite you to come grow with them.
You all know today's guest, Ken Drews, author and photographer of 20 garden books and a daring gardener and plant propagator. He's back today from his garden among the trees to talk shade. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Margaret.
Ah, shade, shade, shade.
We had fun with lots of people.
Yeah, we had a, we should tell people, yeah, we had a, I guess we should maybe like backtrack the history. You know, we've both trotted around the country for decades giving garden lectures, right, to garden clubs and botanical gardens and so forth. And that's kind of vanished in these last 2 years. And so we've been learning to improvise even at our advanced age. Right. And so we gave it, we had a book club, right, about your shade book.
A free book club.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was fun. And how many people joined us, do you think?
360-ish, I think, registered. And they can watch the recording, too. So about maybe 250, 275 were there live with us. And yeah, it was fun. And people, this sort of ticket was either you had to show us you had the book, send us a picture of the book, or read or show us that you're reading it on Kindle or from the library or something. And you know, so that they could jump in and ask questions and stuff from the book. And yeah, so it was fun. And so I thought, you know, it got me thinking about how we met. It's almost literally 30 years ago to the day, as I said.
Well, that's when the book came out. I don't know if we met. Well, and it certainly wasn't in January.
No, no. But, you know, it's close because it was a new book at the time when I reached you. Yeah. So
you look the same.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there you go. Isn't he a flatterer, folks? So I'd like to say we'll have a giveaway of the shade book, but it's like sold out everywhere at the moment.
So we
could have a giveaway of the book, but when I'll put in the order for it, it may not arrive to the winner right away because people bought it to do the class. And so we ran out of books, but that's a good thing. So, you know, a lot of things that came up in the class, I thought it'd be fun to talk about with a larger group here and drill into a few of them. And, you know, maybe we just start where you began in your presentation in the class. You know, I mean, many gardeners are like, oh, shade is so difficult. Oh, this is really, nothing's growing. You're actually encouraging in the newer book, the creation of more shade. So kind of tell us why.
Well, I remember when that book came out, it was all about how shade is a curse and people wanted to know how to deal with the curse of shade.
Right.
And I thought it was it's a challenge, but it's also, it can be a blessing. It's funny because I had the most kind of resistance when I spoke in the South, which is where they really need shade.
Right.
I think a lot of people just go indoors at the end of May and that's it. But now, because of climate change and everything, I think we need to plant more trees. Well, a lot of people think that because they absorb CO2 and they help in every way. They help, and we have to do our part. And our part may be adding trees, which adds shade. And when I see beautiful cut flowers and nice. The other things that I can't grow, I think they're really wonderful, but you know, I'm committed to shade and I don't really have a choice because of where I am. I also love woody plants.
I know you do. Even propagating them, even from seed and from cuttings and so forth.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think you said the other night, you said that, you know, the temperature difference in the shade alone. I mean, and that's the thing. On a warm day, nothing like going and sitting in a couple of chairs in the shade and having a chat, right? I mean, it's
Well, it can be 10 to 20 degrees cooler in the shade.
Right, right.
And it's getting hotter and hotter. That's what people say, but that's what I know.
Right.
You know, we've been over 100 degrees, and 10 years ago, that didn't happen.
So you're encouraging us to not fear or loathe, no fear and loathing for the shade, but to even celebrate it and even maybe to make some more in some key spots. And part of your presentation that I loved, and I realized when you were talking about it and I was looking at the slides and so forth, and with the transcript of this podcast, we can show some of the pictures you showed, but over on awaytogarden.com. But, you know, I don't really think consciously about it, but of course, duh, it makes so much sense. The leaf structure of the trees and shrubs we choose to create shade, if we're going to create shade, is going to dictate the nature, the sort of density of the shade we have beneath them. So explain some examples of that.
Yeah, what I sort of refer to as the degrees of shade, from a kind of light shade with trees like honey locusts, thornless honey locusts that have tiny leaves and make a very delicate shade, to trees like conifers and evergreens that maybe cast deeper shade. And if you put them in the right place, you can control how much shade there is in all the plants in between. In between, maybe a southern magnolia, an evergreen with big leaves, and all the way to that gledetia, to the thornless honey locust, and everything in between. I'm thinking as I'm speaking, even of a tree that has very dense shade that nobody should plant, which is a Norway maple.
Oh, boy.
Which has not only dense shade, but even puts a chemical into the soil that inhibits the growth of other trees, and it leaves out early, and it drops its leaves late, so it's really affecting in the woodlands where it's escaped. You can see when you go around in the fall and all the leaves have fallen on the trees, except there's some yellow leaves on trees dotted here and there. And those are the Norway maples, which were very popular trees to plant and have incredible. It's like they're like shingles, overlapping dark green.
Yeah.
So now I'm ranting.
So the finer textured, almost ferny-ish foliage is going to let more light through and make a more filtered light, as opposed to a dense shade of So I mean, I think that's important to think about. So a tree is not a tree is not a tree. So when we're making our choices, and then you also sort of espoused another idea for sort of modifying the shade even with existing trees and large shrubs, which is limbing up things, you know, sort of changing the density of some of the existing. And I think this is an opportunity really that gardeners miss, is working with it has to be an artistic arborist, pruner type person. Right. Someone who really gets it, not just a wood butcher, we can do a little editing, can't we?
Yeah, we're not like cutting the tops off trees.
No. But we can do some editing. Yeah.
But editing, thinning, removing some branches, but limbing up is removing the lower branches to let more light in.
Right. So that if, for instance, you had wanted to put a shrub layer, you maybe have your ground cover, and you wanted to put an intermediate layer, you might be able to do that a little more easily, right?
Yeah, in the exhibit that I showed, it was Barbara Tiffany's garden, and she had her trees limbed up, and then she could grow rhododendrons under them, and they bloomed and looked great.
Right, right. So okay. So there's a few possibilities. And one thing that people wanted to know more about, and both you and I have done hands-on experiments in this over the years, is planting beneath established trees and also older, larger shrubs, you know, where there's already root systems and so forth. And And you did a demo, a video that we can, in your presentation, that we can include again with the transcript of this over on awaytogarden.com. But describe, you know, here we are, we want to have something growing underneath a tree, but we're not going to take out a big old shovel, right? I mean, that's not happening.
Especially if it's a shallow rooted tree, like a maple or
right.
Goodness forbid a beech, if you have a beech, an older beech tree. I showed how you can make little holes either with a hori-hori knife or a little trowel and just scratch a little opening and plant baby plants, maybe from plugs or from divisions of other plants that you have. Or you can plant bulbs, and or you can plant bulbs like galanthus, you know, the minor bulbs that bloom in the spring before the leaves on the trees leaf out and cast shade and have a pretty big show there. Even things like trillium you can plant. I don't do that a lot because I want the trees to be happy, and it ends up being a kind of a pretty thing. But what I did do when I started my woodland garden is I planted under about a pie wedge shaped quarter of the area under the tree, with just by adding some material, compost and some gravel, a very well draining mix so I didn't smother the roots, and planted woodland plants that are short and wouldn't really compete with the tree. But I was able to have a woodland garden under a very old established white pine.
Right. So you didn't, and I think it's super important to emphasize, you did not suffocate that tree's roots by dumping a whole truckload of medium of soil or anything. Or cutting any of the roots. You picked a wedge, a little, as you say, a piece of pie, a little spot, and you put a little bit of medium, but you weren't smothering it. And I think that's really important. And I think we have to be patient, depending on the plant we're working with, but we have to be patient. I mean, I remember years ago, and you and I have talked about this before, but a friend gave me, this is like 20 years ago, a tray of hellebore seedlings. He was breeding, making deliberate crosses to get certain colors of hellebore flowers. And he had big trays of them. It was like a flat of 72 little plugs, you know, and he sent them to me. And I was like, what the heck am I going to do with these things? You know, as I hadn't grown hellebores. These are the ex hybridus or orientalis types, you know, that bloom in late winter and are mostly evergreen until late early spring. And I was like, what am I going to do? And he said, because he knew my garden, and he said, well, try under one of your old apples. I have these 150-year-old apples. And he said, try under one of your apples. And he said exactly what you said. He said, now take like a, you know, practically a tablespoon, you know, or a hori-hori right. or something. And, you know, these are little tiny seedlings, and just put little, and he said, put them, you know, a foot or 18 inches apart or whatever. And I thought, this is going to really look stupid, you know, right? And so for a couple of years it did look stupid. But I did also what you said, I put some trilliums in and some other things and some minor bulbs, some snowdrops, as you suggested, and in these teeny little holes every so often. And, you know, it's become one of the showiest areas of the garden. Because those were plants that, because they were starting at a very young age in the spot, they either made it or they didn't within that root, that competitive root area of the trees, right? I mean, I didn't give them an edge.
They established like, themselves.
Correct.
You know, it's funny how you're saying this. You looked under the apple tree, but a lot of times you do something like that and, you know, you go away and you do something else and you don't stand there tapping your feet waiting for them to grow. Hellebores are kind of slow.
They are, yeah.
To grow big enough to flower and look really great. But some other plants will do it in a year.
Yeah.
And as I said, you're not really there. Think of all the things you've planted, even trees. You go away and before you know it, like, 7 years later, you've been busy with other things and the tree's blooming or it's big or it's casting shade. It's amazing how that happens.
Yeah. And for this purpose, if we're going to tuck things in, and, you know, carefully and respectfully of the elder statesmen of the tree, you know, we need to pick things that aren't looking for a home in highly organic, moist soil, because the root system of an established tree is, generally speaking, and extremely speaking, if we're talking about a conifer, which is a whole nother story, it's not a place where a little plant is going to outcompete the big woody guy for resources, right? I mean, these have to be adaptable things. A lot of times, like the things that we would think of as either dry shade or tough kind of little plants, I think.
And, you know, I must have said it 10 times yesterday, the other day when we had the that water.
Water, exactly.
And that's true for anything that you're planting, especially woodland plants. You know, people sometimes think that, well, native plants get along all by themselves, and they plant them and they expect them to get along all by themselves. But that first year, they need help getting established. And if they live, they'll take much longer to get established. So that first year, if it doesn't rain at least an inch a week, you have to help and water them. And just, they're little plants, so you don't have to water for hours or really deep. Just keep your eye on them and help them along.
Another thing that people asked about in the sort of book club class was the shade garden in winter. And, you know, both of us, I think when they asked the question, you know, it was on the spot and so forth, and it was evening, and so I couldn't look out the window. I don't know about you, but you probably couldn't look out the window either and see anything, because it gets dark at 4 o'clock now? Mm-hmm. But you know, what are the things that make a shade garden work in winter? What are some of the things that you, since that class, you know, maybe have taken a look around that?
I thought about this, and maybe I haven't paid enough attention to winter, but when I look around, I think, oh, that's pretty and that's nice, and look how those hydrangea flowers are still persisting on the shrub, and they're beautiful. And so I certainly haven't planted for winter, and I guess I should. But the hellebores are all green and looking pretty good. And as I said, the hydrangeas have their faded, dried flowers. And then there are the evergreens, the conifers, and the shape of trees and the way the light is. And the paper bark maple at this time of year has exfoliating bark, and I planted it so that the setting sun will make it glow in the winter. It's a different kind of winter interest, I guess.
Right. And you said, you just gave an example of bark, and I was thinking, again, a reflection after our class the other night, Stewardia. I have a Stewardia across the yard. You know, Coosa dogwoods, I mean, and easy to grow. You know, they have gorgeous exfoliating kind of camouflagey colored patterned bark. Those are great. And then structure too. I mean, I don't know how many years ago I had some shrub died on the north side of my house. And now, of course, I can't even remember what it was. And I couldn't figure out what to put. And then I went for something with structure, a shrub with winter structure. I thought, oh, you know, that would be nice to walk past even on the winter days. And what I picked was a filbert, corallus. It's called Red Dragon. It's got kind of purple leaves in season. It's deciduous, but it's all contorted and twisted. And this is a variety that has disease resistance built into it, because a lot of the older filberts had a lot of disease problems. And it's a part shade. I mean, you know, it could be in a sunnier spot, but it's a part shade. It's purple foliage in the season. But what I really like much more than that is when it's naked, you know, half the year around here, you know, from leaf drop in fall. It's this twisty, crazy looking thing, a real sculpture, right? And it's just so fun. I get pleasure from it every day of the year. So again, that's not going to go in the deep woods, but in part shade, that's a great one. And then what about twig dogwoods? I mean, and twig willows, again, not in dense shade, but I have red and gold and all kinds of things going on outside right now, even in semi-shady places.
And you're reminding me, I think I have hemimelis, witch hazels that bloom from different ones, from fall to right now.
Right.
And all the way through March. And that you wouldn't even notice them in summer because the flowers are almost insignificant, but a lot of them are very fragrant. But this time of year, when you see little yellow or red ribbons or purple ribbons, it catches your eye or your nose.
Yeah. Yeah. The witch hazels I noticed, maybe it was like January 3rd or 4th. I noticed that the first ones here were unfurling their little like ribbon, like flowers. And, some years it's much later and some years it's right around now. So that's the sort of midwinter stuff. I was thinking of, so there's the opportunity for texture and structure and, you know, texture like in the bark and structure and color like those twig dogwoods and twig willows. And also even in the conifers, such a range of color that with some conscious thought, like I have a couple around the yard of a gold conifer, a Chamaecyprus obtusa cripsii, this gold Chamaecyprus. And at a distance, even in the winter, it really pulls your eye to that area of the garden. It's a real beacon, you know, so some color in the conifers, not all just dark green, right? I think it is nice. And then, you know, like up by one of them, up on the hill, I have some of this Salix, this willow. I think it has some crazy long name like Salix alba subspecies Vitellina britzensis.
Oh yeah, that's
but if
great.
You look for britzensis, you'll. And I don't prune it back. I just let it be. It's like a million feet tall, straight up. And again, it's like this punctuation, crazy gold thing up there. And it calls my eye up the hill, even, and it's, you know, in a semi-shady, these are not, again, in the middle of the woods. So evergreen ground covers, you mentioned some. I mean, the European ginger, the epimediums, those persist, you know, into the late winter, early spring when they get cut back. Lots of possibilities. So in the last couple minutes, what about, are there any bulbs for shade? You mentioned something about like where deciduous trees and shrubs are, we can do the early bloomers under those. But do you have luck with any other bulbs in shade, flowering bulbs in shade?
Not a whole lot. And I haven't really tested it that much because, the whole thing about bulbs is deciduous trees, that most of them are blooming so that they can gather as much light as possible before the trees leaf out. And bulbs like daffodils, they need sun rebloom. But there are some summer flowering bulbs. Oh, gosh, we grow so many. You and I grow euchomas. Those are bulbs.
Yes, the pineapple lilies, right.
Right, and you grow the voodoo and dragon lily types.
Yes, the soromatum and the amorphophallus. Now, those I grow for their foliage, so those I put in pots, and they're in the shade, and that's fine. The euchomas I usually put in sunnier spots. I don't know about you.
Well, I don't have sunnier spots.
Oh, so you're saying in part shade, they're doing fine. Okay.
They get probably, I don't know, 3.5 to 4 hours of sun.
All right.
But then they're in bright light or shade for the rest of the time. And I think I have at least 12 different ones. And they bloom. They're doing fine.
Yeah, and Dave Culp, who's written a number of books, we've known him for a long time, both of us, the Brandywine Cottage books, he has a whole collection from fall until well into spring, including a lot of winter bloomers of the snowdrops, of the galanthus. You know, I mean, you can really study a genus and see which ones do the best. What about, what are the, colchicum, is that a word I'm trying to say? What are the ones that have the pretty leaves? Colchicums?
No. You think they're pretty? have leaves. They bloom in the fall, most of them. Then in the spring they have very big leaves that are nice, but you have to really think about where you're going to put them.
Okay.
Because because they'll shade out even the plants around them. And those big leaves last for a while. But if you do think about that, it's okay. And they, I think that in now in January, I think that I've seen some of them just beginning to show.
Yeah.
So they're very, very early that they come up.
Well, lots of possibilities. We just touched on a few.
I've got Galanthus blooming now, actually.
Oh, you do? Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Cool. I'll have to go march around and see if I do up here. So thank you, Ken. It's always good to talk. And as like I said, we're going to have a book giveaway of the new Shade Garden, but it's going to be a delayed receipt of the book because we're a little out of stock, but that's okay. Thanks again for the class the other night, and I'll talk to you soon.
Oh, it's great. Thanks, Margaret.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, a leading publisher in books that share wonders with the natural world, including A Way to Garden by Margaret Roach. The stunning guide imparts decades of plant wisdom and challenges readers to think beyond their garden borders and to consider the ways gardening can enrich the world. Available everywhere books are sold and at timberpress.com. They invite you to come grow with them.
And I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too, I hope. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.